Okay, so if you were preparing the Makoro sheets, so you saw a little bit of the sugya of mitzvos tzrichas kavana, which is basically a question that that Chazal are struggling with all the way back in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Chav Ches, that you saw the Chazal are struggling with understanding when you do a mitzvah, when you're involved in doing a command of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so do you have to have an intent? Do you have to have a will? Do you have to have anything in mind? You have to be cognizant of what you're doing to some degree. And to what degree do you have to have that in mind, right? What level of das, what level of understanding and of intent and reason and drive do you have to have in performing that mitzvah? So we started with the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Chav Ches. That's the Gemara that you guys looked at, prepared together, father and son, for the last half hour. But there's another Mishnah, really this idea of mitzvot tzrichas kavana appears in multiple places throughout Shas. There's another Mishnah and a Gemara that's important that we're aware of that's worth noting right now. The Mishnah at the tail end of Maseches Pesachim on Kuf Yud Daled says that a person at the Seder eats two vegetables, two borei pri adamas, and it's kind of strange. Why are we eating two vegetables? If there's a mitzvah to eat a vegetable, so we should do it once. Why are we doing two vegetables? So Reish Lakish in the Gemara, in Pesachim there, explains that this is because mitzvos tzrichos kavana. What do you mean mitzvos tzrichos kavana? So basically what Reish Lakish is explaining is that you have this mitzvah to eat maror, you have this mitzvah to eat a vegetable, you're going to make a borei pri adama. But the first time you make that borei pri adama, it's not entirely clear what you're doing. So we ask you to do the thing twice so that we're sure that you're intending, when you're eating that vegetable, you're intending for the mitzvah and not simply doing it in order to satisfy your hunger or something like that. Mitzvot tzrichas kavana, so we make you actually repeat the action twice so that we can ensure that when you do the act of the mitzvah, you actually intend what you're doing. You have that intent, that kavana, to do the mitzvah. Our Gemara was talking about different cases, two particular cases. One was also Pesach night, right? Achilas matzah. The Gemara gave an interesting case where a person was force-fed matzah, and the Gemara wondered whether such a person could be yotze the mitzvah in such a way. He did consume matzah. Matzah did go in his mouth and down through his digestive tract. Well, with matzah, it never really makes it all the way through the digestive tract, but it got half the way through, hopefully, the digestive tract at least. And he really did the act of eating matzah, presumably. It was forced. You'll understand on Pesach, don't worry. You'll understand on Pesach, yeah? Just remember this in a few months. So he did the act.
The whole shiur.
This is one nekudah, he's going to be on. We're going to do the Chazar shiur on this. So the act of matzah you certainly did, but you didn't have in mind to eat matzah because it was forced down your throat. Some non-Jews were forcing it down your throat. Does that really count as the mitzvah? The Gemara is discussing that. The other case the Gemara discusses, obviously, is shofar, a mitzvah that we're going to hopefully be mekayim somewhat soon. In Rosh Hashanah, Haba Aleinu Latova. If a person was tokei al ashir, what does that mean? He blew shofar, not because he was trying to be mekayim the mitzvah, not because he was trying to get that mitzvah del raisa that applies on Rosh Hashanah, but because he was trying to make music, make sounds, and that was something that was interesting, exciting to him. So is he yotzei a mitzvah shofar if he just makes trumpet sounds out of a ram's horn? Or no, he has to intend with his mind, with his heart, that he wants to be mekayim the mitzvah of shofar when he's doing that. So that's what the Gemara is struggling with. What do you think the conclusion is? What do you think the maskan is? How do we paskin l'halacha? How do we hold? Either can you tell from the Gemara, or did you see any other source that talks about this? So the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara is totally unclear. So I assume that's why everyone's not saying anything. The Gemara is or are you still trying to figure out the digestive tract point? I know that's you, but everyone else I think got over it. So the Gemara is not clear. The Gemara doesn't really have a conclusion about mitzvos tzrichas kavana or not, but the Shulchan Aruch does. If you look in source number two, the Shulchan Aruch paskins yesh omrim she'ein mitzvos tzrichas kavana v'yesh omrim she'tzrichas kavana latzeis ba'asiyas osa mitzvah. So he gives two opinions. Some people say you don't need kavana. Some people say you do need kavana. Not really clear how we should paskin, but says the Shulchan Aruch v'chein halacha, meaning like the second opinion, that we assume that when you do a mitzvah, you do have to have intent in order to be mekayim that mitzvah. You do need to have kavana in order to be mekayim the mitzvah. One side note. The Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah in Maseches Brachos comment that we're hearing this whole debate about whether mitzvos tzrichos kavana, do you have to have in mind that you're being in fulfillment of this mitzvah while you're doing it, or is it enough to do the act, even if you're not thinking anything at all? Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah point out two points that are important. First of all, they say that this is all a question of lichatchila. Bidi Eved, sure, Bidi Eved, we all agree that mitzvos ain't on tzrichas kavana. If you do the let's say it this way actually. Bidi Eved, the question is, are you yotze or not? If you did a mitzvah without intent, are you yotze the mitzvah or are you not yotze the mitzvah? That's what the Gemara is discussing. But everyone agrees, says Rabbeinu Yonah, everyone agrees that what's the ideal way to do a mitzvah? with intent, right? To think about what you're doing, to be cognizant of what you're doing, to have in mind the mitzvah and the fact that you want to fulfill that mitzvah. Everyone agrees that that's the ideal way, the lichatchila way to perform the mitzvah. The question is only, okay, but if you didn't do that, are you still makayim the mitzvah? Are you still in fulfillment of that mitzvah? That's the first thing Rabbeinu Yonah says. The second thing Rabbeinu Yonah says, which is so important, is that this concept of mitzvos tzrichos kavanah, mitzvos ein tzrichos kavanah, this debate is only relevant by mitzvos which have to do with actions, which have to do with maisim. Mitzvos or halachos which have to do with speech, everyone agrees mitzvos tzrichos kavanah. What are some mitzvos of speech? Tefillah, brachos, right? That's derabanan, but it's still a mitzvah. Sometimes you have berachos hamitzvah, which are daraisa. So you could have kriya shema, tefillah, kriya shema, brachos, right? Those are things that involve speech. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, speech, this is an important thing to internalize, speech without intent, speech without thoughtfulness, is like empty shells. It's like firing empty shells. Speech is only meaningful if a person means what he says. If a person davens to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a whole Shemona Esrei, and even takes a long time to say the words, but has no clue what they're saying, doesn't know they're standing in front of Hashem, doesn't know the words that they're trying to express to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't understand the words, what they mean, doesn't understand how to pronounce them, he's just saying words from the Siddur, even if he does pronounce them right, that's not a tefillah. Because a tefillah is supposed to be with meaning, with intent. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, mitzvos tzrichos kavanah, mitzvos ein tzrichos kavanah. We could debate by lula, we could debate by shofar and by matzah. But by tefillah and brachos, if a person doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't have any intent about the fact that they're davening to Hashem, how is that meaningful? How is that something that's going to register on the level of tefillah, on the level of prayer? So certainly, the mitzvos of tefillah, of brachos, certainly a person has to have kavanah, has to have intent when they're doing those things. One last halachic point, and then we'll get to the crux, hopefully, of what you saw on the Rambam. There's a Chai Adam that the Mishnah Berurah quotes. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a Chai Adam, an earlier posek. He wasn't really officially a posek. He wasn't a hired posek. He was a businessman. He just happened to be extremely good in learning, and Rav Avram Danzig, and he ended up becoming a posek for the community, and ended up becoming a posek when he lost his business. They hired him as a rav, but he started off as a regular working man who just learned a lot on the side. He knew all the answers to everyone's questions, so he answered questions, but he didn't start as a rabbi. He didn't get paid as a rabbi for sure in the beginning, but you know, most rabbis don't get paid either, so it's not really that different than modern day. But the Chai Adam ended up becoming one of the major poskim that the Mishnah Berurah quotes all the time. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Chai Adam in this context, and he says an interesting thing. He says, let's say the following case happens. Stay with me and see if you can answer the question. Let's say you wake up, let's say you wake up tomorrow morning. You come to shul, you come to daven in the Yula based medrash, let's say, and it's 8:15 is davening, 8:30 is davening, 8:15? 8:15 davening. You get here at 8:15. 8:18. Okay, so you get here at 8:15 so that you can put on your tefillin in time and say the brachos and get ready with karbanos and everything like that. You lay tefillin, and you have no clue what you're doing. You wrap the leather onto your arms, you're not paying attention, you're tired, you just woke up, you're not paying attention at all to what you're doing. And then you go through the whole davening, and you're paying minimal attention also. You get to Kriyas Shema, you read the words, but you're not exactly paying attention. Were you yotze at the end of davening, you realize, oh my gosh, I just sleptwalked through that whole davening. Was I yotze the mitzvah of tefillin? Was I yotze the mitzvah of Kriyas Shema? Let's say it's not tomorrow morning. Let's say it's Sukkos. You come to shul Sukkos morning. You take the branch and you take the fruit and you start shaking them all over, but it doesn't mean anything more than that to you. You have no idea what you're doing. You're not paying attention. You're so sleepy. You don't really realize what you're doing. You finish davening. You're like, oh, I just shook lulav and esrog and I didn't have it in mind. Were you yotze? What's the answer? Based on what we saw until now, why were you yotze? You did the action. So maybe b'di'avad you fulfilled the mitzvah. Were you yotze on a level of mitzvah tzrichos kavana? Did you have kavana? No. So the Shulchan Aruch told us that ideally, at least, lichatchila at least, a person must have kavana for sure on mitzvah daraisa. So lulav, you shook without any kavana whatsoever. So did you have mitzvah tzrichos kavana? Of course not. Maybe b'di'avad you were yotze because you did the action, but you could not have been yotze in the ideal way, correct? The Chai Adam says a tremendous chiddush. Listen to this. The Chai Adam says, yes, a person who shook lulav in shul without any intent was yotze lichatchila, in the ideal way, as if he had kavana. Why would that be? I told you, the guy wasn't thinking straight, right? He wasn't thinking about lulav. How could it be that he did have kavana, even though he really didn't have kavana? After the fact doesn't help. When he was shaking it, he didn't have the kavana. The Chai Adam says something amazing. He says, when a person wakes up in the morning and takes a lulav in their house and shakes it around and doesn't pay attention to what he's doing, you're right, there's no kavana. But if you went to shul and you stood in a room with 50 people with talesim on and they're all shaking these branches together, doing the mitzvah during halal, you happen to be spaced out, what's obvious here? context proves that you did that because you were trying to keep a mitzvah. Okay, in your head, you were thinking that you were playing a sword fight with the guy in front of you, maybe. But you're standing in a shul with 50 other people who are shaking lulav for a mitzvah purpose. The context proves what you were doing. It's true, your mindset wasn't all there. Officially, in a real way, you didn't have that kavana, that intent for the mitzvah. But context proves what you were really doing. And if we were looking at the videotape right now, we would know that you were shaking lulav in shul on this day of Sukkos. That is the mitzvah d'oraisa of shaking lulav on Sukkos. And that context determines it as if you had kavana when you were doing it. Yeah, Rafi. Yeah, so that is a lumdish question, meaning is it true what you said? There certainly is truth that there is a bracha and a mitzvah. Is it true that the bracha is part of the mitzvah, or are those two separate features? So some will say what you said, and if you didn't have kavana by the bracha, maybe you didn't fully fulfill the mitzvah because you didn't really fully fulfill the bracha. What?
What if you shook without a bracha?
You still yotze the mitzvah in terms of the mitzvah itself, but you missed out on the bracha. You might have done something wrong also. It's potentially usser to do a mitzvah without a bracha. Different discussion in the Taz, but it's related to slichos actually, but not for now.
I would say if there were not just one sleepwalker, but 50 sleepwalkers.
Yeah, you're talking about Yula E15? No, I'm just asking. You were the one who brought it up. Rabbi Safran, you guys should deal with this afterwards.
But what happens if
everybody's sleepwalking, right?
Everyone
gives us
two
amount
of this, so you don't have
right.
The same kind of,
right. I don't know.
Kind of being.
Right, that everyone's involved in the mitzvah. Maybe, yeah, I don't know. Does the collective context still exist? Everyone's sleepwalking here on the first day of Sukkot because ultimately we all know that it's the first day of Sukkot, but I don't know. It's a good question.
Also, to add a different perspective, when you were sharing it, I was thinking more of someone who's not capable of having an event.
Oh.
So imagine someone's in a hospital, their brain's not functioning.
Right.
Someone's putting tefillah on them, or they're participating in the bracha, I would think yes, they're doing the mitzvah, right. Even though they can't possibly
right.
Have
right. And there, it could be because he's almost like an ones. It's impossible for him to do it, so the Torah can't demand that of him. But maybe you're right. Maybe the mere fact that someone's helping him do it for him, proves that the guy's doing it for that reason. He just doesn't have the capacity now to apply that on his own with his cognition. But you're right. That's another good example. Maybe in such a case, the person is still yotze. Look, b'di'eved will say probably the guy is yotze anyways because he did the action. But even on level of kavana, maybe that is there. Maybe the context proves it in that case also. That's the Chai Adam's amazing chiddush over here. Amazing. We'll discuss the Rambam now for a few moments, and it might shed a little bit of light on that Chai Adam. So keep that Chai Adam in mind for a second. You guys saw the Rambam? People saw the fathers and sons? Okay. So what did the Rambam say in Hilchos Shofar? If you look in source number 3, on the right side, what did the Rambam say in Hilchos Shofar? He said that if you have a guy who's the Baal Tekeah, he's blowing shofar for the Kehillah, and you have other people who are listening, so you're not Yotze the Mitzvah until what? Achi Eskaven Shomea Umashmia. So what does that imply? Mitzvos, Tzrichos, Kavana. Easy. Good. What does the Rambam say in Hilchos Chametz Matzah on the left side? He quotes that case of the non-Jew, the Gentile, force-feeding the Jew his matzah on Seder night. And what does the Rambam say? You're Yotze or you're not Yotze? You are Yotze, even though it was forced down your throat. What does that imply? Mitzvos and on Tzrichos Kavana. So this is a problem. The Rambam, I'm going to teach you something new here. You should write this down. The author of the Rambam is the same author of the Rambam. So if he says two different things in two different places, it's a bad thing. It's a stira. In some areas of learning in Judaism, people will say maybe it was multiple authors. Maybe the Rambam wasn't multiple authors. There was one Rambam. So, or at least archaeologists haven't discovered a second Rambam yet. So we're going to assume there's one Rambam. So this is what we call a stira. This is a contradiction. This is no good. What do you do with this? Rambam versus Rambam. Mitzvos yet ni kavana or mitzvos don't ni kavana? How do you answer the question? So did anyone come with an answer? Everyone have any thoughts besides the Mark family? Cheaters? So which case is a physical act?
So when you're eating the matzah, you're actually doing the act of eating the matzah.
Okay.
When you're hearing the shofar, all you're doing is hearing the shofar. You're not doing any other discernible
You're not actively...
act. No discernible act.
Okay. Anyone else have a same answer, different answer? I said you guys are puzzled, I said. So similar to what you said, although not exactly the same, similar to what you said, the Ran provides a very, very famous fundamental answer. The Ran is quoted by the Magid Mishnah, which is a commentary on the Rambam, and the Ran says as follows. In order to understand the Ran, we need a little bit of background. If you look through Halacha, you'll find there's basically four levels of action, human action, that exist, al pi Halacha. You could do something b'mezid, purposely, You do an Avera b'mezid. You flip on a light switch on Shabbos, that's an Avera on purpose. It's bad. You could do an Avera b'shogeg, right? You could do a Maisa b'shogeg. You could do something accidentally, meaning a person knows it's Shabbos but doesn't realize that you're not allowed to turn on lights. Or knows that you're not allowed to turn on lights on Shabbos but doesn't realize it's Saturday today and he turns on the light. That's an accidental action. It's a lower level of action. Then you have a level of action which we spoke about on Shabbos at the Young Israel called Ones, where a person is totally, totally forced into what he does. He's not, he knows it's Shabbos, he knows you're not allowed to turn on lights, but his friend takes his hand and turns on the light. So he was forced into it, he couldn't prevent it. That's called an ones. There's a fourth level of action as well in halacha called misasek. Misasek basically is translated as absent-mindedness, or totally lacking knowledge of what a person is doing. What's a case of that, where a person doesn't know what they're doing? What do you mean? He's not an ones, he's not a shogeg, he's not amazed. What's misasek? So Tosas and Maseches Shabbos on Daf Ayin Beis provide two examples. I'll give you one, and then I'll give you a more relevant example. They say, imagine a guy is walking through a field, and he sees on the floor a carrot. And you think, ooh, I'd like to eat a carrot right now. That sounds like a yummy thing to do. And that carrot is detached anyways, so you're not allowed to pluck a carrot out of the ground, but this carrot is already plucked out, so I'll just pick it up and eat it. That sounds like it's fine. And he picks it up, and lo and behold, oh, it was attached. He had no idea it was attached. He knows you're not allowed to pluck it out on Shabbos. He knows it's Shabbos today. He just thought the carrot was laying on the ground freestanding, not attached to the ground, so he picked it up. Turns out it was attached to the ground. That's misasik. Totally absent-minded, totally unwilling, totally unknowing of the reality of what he was doing. That's called misasik. That is the lowest level of maisa, or not a maisa at all, in terms of halacha. More relevant example, remember, you turn on a light switch on purpose, that's a mezid. You did that on purpose. You turn on a light switch not knowing it's Shabbos, that's shogeg, an accident. You turn on a light switch because your friend shoves your hand into it, that's ones, you were forced into it. What if you're leaning against the wall, you have no idea there's a light switch there, and your back, the pressure of your back against the wall, turns the light on? That's called misasik. That's where a person, he wasn't even forced into it, he didn't know. It was absent-minded. He had no relationship at all to the action he was doing. That's called misasik. Misasik is always pater. It might even be more than that. It might not be called a maisa, an act at all in terms of halacha, but you're certainly exempt from anything. There's no punishment for such a crime of misasek because the person had no knowledge of what he was doing whatsoever. So, are there any cases where you can be punished for misasek? Is there any case where a person would be punished for an action that's so unknowing and so absent-minded? So the Gemara in Krisis on Daf Yud Tes suggests, Shmuel in the Gemara there suggests that maybe there is a case where a person can be punished for a action that was done absent-mindedly, a misasik. It's called misasik bechlavim ve'arayos. We'll give one example. A person has some liquidy substance in his mouth, and he thinks to himself, oh, I think that's some of my saliva. Right? We all have saliva in our mouths, nothing to be embarrassed about. So he starts swishing it around, and taka, it tastes pretty good. So he swallows it. Saliva, fine, my saliva. Later he finds out, oh my gosh, no, I just realized I had a chelev, I had some non-kosher food in my mouth. It seemed like saliva at the time, and I swallowed non-kosher food. For sure, misasik, right? The guy had no idea what he was doing. He didn't know he thought it was his own saliva. He didn't think he was harmless. But at the end of the day, he did swallow chelev, he did swallow non-kosher food. So what's the halacha? So Shmuel says in such a case, he is chayev. He is held accountable for his action. Why? What changed? What's different? Misasik bechlav marayos, Rafi, is chayev why? Why is the person who swallowed the thing that seemed like it wasn't a non-kosher food, but then he tasted non-kosher food and got a geshmak out of it, why is he chayev?
Because it's like a benefit.
Excellent. The Gemara says, Shmuel says, excellent, shekein nehne. Because even though it's true that it was unintentional and it was unknowing, all of that is true, but at the end of the day, if you ask this guy what he did today, he will tell you that he ate a geshmaka piece of chelev. He swallowed a very tasty substance called non-kosher food. If you get that much benefit, shekein nehne, if you enjoyed what you did, then the halacha looks at that as if it is your action, even though you did it totally unknowingly. It gets turned into your action because you, at the end of the day, you benefited so much that it acts as if it's your action. Says the Ran, the same is true on the flip side. The same is true in mitzvos. If I do an action totally unknowingly, totally absent-mindedly, it's not my action. It doesn't relate to me. I leaned against the wall and the light went on. I didn't turn on the light. The light went on by itself. It just happens to me. My back was the one that provided the pressure, but there was no knowledge. It can't be called my act if it's so unknowing. But what if I actually enjoyed what happened? What if someone shoved matzah down my throat, and even though I was forced into it and had no intent to keep a mitzvah, I enjoyed the matzah a little bit. Now that assumes something about you're eating a matzah also. But okay, I did enjoy. I was filled up, right? I was satiated by the matzah. I got some enjoyment. Says the Ran, Shekein Nehene. In the case of eating matzah by force, a person is doing it unwillingly. He doesn't want to perform the mitzvah, but since he gains, he derives some benefit, Shekein Nehene, it turns into his action, and he is mekayim the mitzvah of matzah. However, the case of blowing shofar, if the guy doesn't have intent, if he doesn't want to be mekayim this mitzvah of shofar, then there's no tangible hana, there's no tangible benefit that he derives from hearing the shofar with no intent whatsoever, totally absentmindedly, that's going to turn it into his action. So if it's not his action, he can't be mekayim the mitzvah, he can't fulfill the mitzvah, because he didn't do anything. It was totally off the radar, it was totally not in his mind. He just happened to hear a trumpet blowing, finds out later it was shofar, that's not going to work for his mitzvah. If you were nehene, if you enjoyed it, then it will count as your mitzvah. Says the Ran, that's what's going on in the Rambam over here. Apparently there are not two authors of the Rambam. There's one author. He was saying two different things. In the case of shofar, you need kavana in order to be yotze. You need intent to be yotze. Why? Because just hearing something without paying any attention, without knowing what's going on, that's not going to suffice as a mitzvah. But when the matzah is forced down the guy's throat, even though he has no intent to be mekayim the mitzvah, he certainly is yotze, says the Rambam. Why? Because he enjoyed the process. He benefited from that matzah. If he benefited from the matzah, the halacha looks at it as if that's actually his action. And even though mitzvos do need kavana, you do need to have intent, it's as if you had intent, as if it's your maisa, your action, because you enjoyed the process of the eating. Now, just to end with the following note, the Rav, in source number 4, you have from Isha Halacha, Halachic Man, from Soloveitchik, the Rav defines what mitzvos srichas kavana means, because you have to make a brisker chilek over here. There's a chilek between kavana and kavanas. Okay, kavanas is what Chassidim refer to as kavana, meaning the Arizal delineated for us all different things we're supposed to think while we're saying tefillah, while we're doing mitzvos. There are a million different kavanas you're supposed to have about the... You'll ask Daniel Goffman afterwards, he'll give you the Chalban's read on all of these Chalbanas. You have to have certain, you know, yichudim and certain ideas you're thinking about when you're doing mitzvos, lofty esoteric concepts. When you hear the shofar, it's crying of your neshama, and it's crying, and Hashem is hearing the crying, and there's like a lot of different messages that you're allowed to have kavana about, and maybe in some level you're supposed to have kavana about. It says the Rav, that's not what mitzvos strichas kavana means. It doesn't mean you have to put on a gartel and read the whole Arizal and Nefesh HaChaim and figure out what the kavana is for every mitzvah. No, that's not the pshat. The pshan kavana means that a person has to think, I am doing the Ratzon Hashem. I'm doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of me. This mitzvah in front of me is what Hashem commanded me to do. That's the intent. That's the extent of the intent that I have to have. It would be great if we have more kavana and understand the mitzvahs even more, but that's already enough. That suffices as mitzvos tzrichos kavana. The thing is that when you think about kavana in that way and you don't have these lofty esoteric ideas behind your mitzvos, so sometimes you feel like mitzvos can get stale, they can get dry, they can get boring. You're just doing it because Hashem said so, it's hard to connect to. So if you look in source number 5, and you should read this on your own because we're going to end from Arab in a minute, but if you look at source number 5, you'll see something from my Rebbe's father, Rabbi Dr. Isidore Twersky, who has an article. The English is relatively easy relative to the rest of the article. Relatively easy over here. You can get through it if you read it on your own. But what he basically points out is that when a person has kavana, has intent, that the actions he's doing are because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded him to do so, then that changes the essence of everything he does. Even if you don't know that when you shake the lulav up, it's this ruach and that ruach and this shade gets beat and that shade gets beat, even if you don't know each of the esoteric, lofty kavanos, if you know you're doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then that action has meaning. And guess what? When you tie your shoes in the morning and you put your right shoe and then your left shoe and you tie your left and then your right, that also has meaning. You're just putting on your shoes. But everything takes on a little bit more meaning when you realize you're doing it because and in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked you to. So mitzvos trichos kavana. And it only means that base level of kavana. But even that base level of kavana, even that idea, just realizing that this is the ratzon habore, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of me in this moment, that too can inform and uplift our mitzvos. So b'siyat d'shmai, we have a Rosh Hashanah coming up, we have a Pesach in a few months also. We should work on understanding the mitzvos as deeply as possible, but at least, we should be cognizant and pay attention to the mitzvos we're doing, mitzvos trichos kavana, and that way, hopefully, we'll gain great benefit and great meaning from the mitzvos we do. Shkayach to everyone for coming, and we'll see you hopefully next week.